Support for WYPR comes from the Park School of Baltimore's Saturday morning Rise and Shine activity sessions for children 3 to 5 years of age. Nature expedition through the Park School woods is April 20th. parkschool.net/shine.
Beasts did abound in the days of yore when Destroyer 666 was born. Lightning flashed and thunder roared when we spread our wicked wings and soared.
People on vacation think that you, the musician, came with their room. You're like the blueberry yogurt in the free breakfast bar in the morning.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Stoop Storytelling Series podcast. I'm Laura Wexler.
And I am Jessica Hankin.
And this week on the podcast, fame and glory. Not. Two stories that reveal the less than glamorous side of a life in rock and roll.
Before we get started, we want to thank the Park School of Baltimore, which is a pre-K through grade 12 progressive school located just outside Baltimore City.
So this first storyteller shares a last name and children and a home and a life.
And a vagina.
And with Jessica Hankin. But he is a person in his own right.
He is.
Aaron Hankin. And this is a story that occurred before Jessica came on the scene.
That's right.
When he was busy.
Being so cool.
Really cool. Mm-hmm. And it's a epic saga of the creation of a band and a man fulfilling his destiny.
Yes.
Take a listen.
I am from the Midwest, not originally from Baltimore. And when you grow up in the Midwest in the 80s, you are just destined to become a totally uncritical, unapologetic, unabashed heavy metal fan. That was the case for me. My first concert was to go and see Poison and Tesla at the Palace of Auburn Hills. And my musical taste sort of evolved in a predictable fashion from there. I still had no shame in my game. I still am a metalhead today. Fast forward to about 2001 is when I moved here to Baltimore, totally on a whim, had done no homework about this place, moved here along with a fellow Midwestern heavy metal guy. And when we got here, we rolled in. It was late at night. We had a U-Haul. We had rented a super cheap row house on 34th Street in Hamden by the post office. It was cheap. That will tell you how long ago it was in Hamden. And the next morning, I remember we took a walk up and down 36th Street, and I was like taking in the vibe of the place and thinking to myself, like, the beach has got to be really nearby here. Like, that's the level of homework I had done about where I was. So I got to know Baltimore better in the days and weeks to come. And what my roommate and I decided was that what this town really needed was, of course, a heavy metal band, which we were well equipped to, a service we were ready to provide. Now, I want to just make a couple of points of clarification about heavy metal. Heavy metal is a lot like pro wrestling in the sense that you can be a heavy metal fan and you can love heavy metal, but you can at the same time wrap your mind around the fact that heavy metal is, you know, it's sort of a fantasy construct that you consume and buy into and that there's a certain amount of play acting. And you can understand that and you can still be a heavy metal fan. And there's another kind of heavy metal fan that is just in complete denial of that logical circuit, and that's kind of a more scarier heavy metal fan. We were in the first camp of heavy metal fans. We loved the theater of it. We loved the sort of the, it was a production, a heavy metal band. And that is the kind of heavy metal band that we set about to create here in Baltimore. The lineup, me and my Midwestern roommate on dual lead guitars. It's a configuration not often used, but powerful. Let me just point you to the Scorpions and the fact they can play those solos in unison with each other. So we had that going on. For bass player, we had a really cool rock and roll girl who lived in the row house next to us who didn't really know how to play the bass, but she had this cool hot pink bass, so we were like, you're in. The drummer was actually another guy that we knew from the Midwest who had come since we had gotten to Baltimore and installed ourselves to come and visit us, and he had actually ridden his 10-speed bike from Chicago to Baltimore and showed up at our doorstep. Unannounced, and had since been like living on our couch, and just basically spending his days like playing NBA 2K on the PlayStation. So he was available. Now this band needed a good singer, it needed a good front man, it needed the face of the band, and luckily, we happened to meet and know the very tall, handsome, androgynously fashionable icon, a.k.a. Mexican Holy for Holies restaurant owner Jeffrey Danik. I don't know if you guys know this guy. He's a sight to behold and really has an incredible falsetto and just a real flair for the dramatic. And he was my boss at the time. That was my job. I was waiting tables at Holy for Holies. So, done. We had the lineup. We had all the elements we needed. Now came time for a very important task, and that was to name the band. Now, naming a heavy metal band is a special kind of an art. A challenge we were ready and willing and eager to take on. We had named other heavy metal bands in the past quite successfully. My guy that I had moved out there with had a band that you may or may not have heard of from the Columbus, Ohio area that was called Goat's Nuts. And there was an umlaut over the O and the U, and instead of an S, there was a Z. So we were good at this. We were ready to figure out a good name for this band. The truth is, it did not take long to come up with a good name for this band because we didn't have to look any further than the name of our old bowling team from where we had come from. And the name of this bowling team was Destroyer 666. Which is a badass name for a bowling team. And we were just like, even better as a band name. So done. We had a name. We got down to the business of, we created a sort of a world around this band where all the songs of Destroyer 666 were going to be about how Destroyer 666 reigns supreme over all other metal bands. And if you'll permit me, I'll share a couple of choice lyrics with you. Myself and the other lead guitarist made all the lyrics. Beasts did abound in the days of yore when Destroyer 666 was born. Lightning flashed and thunder roared when we spread our wicked wings and soared. I'll give you just a couple more. Just south of a place called heaven, in the land of the mighty guitar licks, we turn it up to 11, Destroyer 666. And then the chorus of that song, I remember, was just shouting, Hamden, Hamden, over and over again. We were playing to the locals, and we would practice in the basement of the row house, and we knew we were onto something because all the Hamden teens at the time, who had nothing better to do, would like conglomerate around our basement window and smoke cigarettes and just be Hamden teenagers. And so we had a legion of fans before we had ever even played a show. Well, the time came when we got a show, and it was at we were the very opening band on a bill with like a dozen different bands, of course. It was actually at the old Auto Bar downtown, and so the week of the show came, and we were psyched because we got the city paper that week, and there we were listed in print, Destroyer 666. It was tiny print. It was at the bottom of the big list of other bands, but the city paper, that's validation. Day of the show arrives. We call up the venue to find what time load-in is, and they tell us, and while we're on the phone with them, they say, by the way, You know, a lot of people have been calling and asking if Destroyer 666 is going to play today. And we were just like, yes, the Hamden teens are going to show up. They're going to show out for us and represent. This is going to be huge. So we got to the venue, and that's when the mystery of these phone calls sort of came. There was some clarification that came to light. And that is that the people that worked there at the time told us they were a little dismayed to inform us of a little bit of trivia, and that's that we were not the first geniuses to come up with the name Destroyer 666 for our band. And that, in fact, there was another band called Destroyer 666 that was an extreme metal band from Australia that was also a white power band. The show happened. We played, and I want to say, I think some fans of the other Destroyer 666 did show up, but honestly, I don't know, because if they did, they were far outnumbered by just the mass of beautiful Baltimore rock and roll weirdos that come to any auto bar show. And it must have been a weird sort of cultural moment of disorientation for those other fans to be in a situation where they found themselves to be a distinct minority and to feel maybe like they didn't necessarily belong in the place where they were. The night passed without incident. We rocked triumphantly. Jeffrey Danik did a great job as our front man. He drank. We had prepared a pumpkin full of fake blood that he drank. It was really more of a vaudeville show that was kind of a heavy metal themed vaudeville show. The band played, I think, one more show after that, which was on stage at this club, the new Auto Bar, the very first week that it opened. We imploded shortly after that. We all got on with our lives. And you always are supposed to end your story with a moral, a reflection on life. No? Well, I'll do it anyway. The moral of the story, I guess, is you can name your bowling team whatever you want. But when you name a band, at least do a Google search. Thank you.
And that's what happens when you don't Google a band name before.
I think that's a cautionary tale.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really, it's good. But I love all the, I just love the way he compares heavy metal to wrestling.
And, oh, yeah.
And yes,
yeah.
You know, I have a soft spot for
A soft spot for wrestling, yes. And he has really taught me the redemptive qualities of what I used to call grit metal. I was very judgmental about Def Leppard, heavy metal. I didn't like it because I was punk rock. Punk rock. We had a beef.
That's right. So your story is like a West Side Story kind of thing, romance, where you were from the punkers and he was from the heavy metal, and you found a way to love each other.
Equally.
It's beautiful.
Disenfranchised.
Before we move on to our next story for the podcast, we want to thank Golden West, which is a vegan-forward restaurant on the Avenue in Hamden, and they are actually the first restaurant in the country to start a vegan restaurant week. That's cool.
Yeah.
If you're vegan, and also if you're not vegan, that's cool. And we also want to thank Baltimore Magazine, which chronicles and celebrates this complicated, wonderful town. You can pick up your copy on newsstands or visit baltimoremagazine.com.
So this next storyteller is actually not only a really talented musician and husband and father, he's also my personal attorney.
Oh, I didn't know you had an attorney.
Now I do.
You've lawyered up.
Things go awry, like if I get into a fender bender, I know who
or
to
a
call.
Fight.
Or a fight. I haven't gotten into a fight.
Lately.
In a long time. Anyway, his name is Artie Hill, and he's going to share this great tale of how he learned, like the Beatles. You know, they had the, what was it called, the Tavern? Anyway, they had a place where they learned, because they got their 10,000 hours, and he learned in Ocean City. Take a listen.
So my name's Artie Hill, and about 20, 21 years ago, I decided to do musically what I'd wanted to do since I was 16 years old, but really hadn't had the nerve, which was just write country songs and do country music classic country style, sort of like Hank, George Jones, that kind of thing, which 21 years ago, living in Baltimore City was an even more ridiculous sounding idea than it is now. And I didn't think anybody would come out to see it or would even care. And but eventually people did. So I'm finishing up my 9th album now. I've written songs that other people have covered. I started a songwriting workshop at the Hank Williams Museum in Montgomery, Alabama. I've played down there. I've played in Texas. I've done a bunch of all this stuff in country music. But what I wanted to talk about was this idea of being independent musician or doing independent music. Back when I was growing up, to me, living on the Eastern Shore, Maryland and Cambridge, where that whole idea of four guys in a van with ramen noodles driving around the country to become famous, I didn't know anybody who was doing that, really. I started my first band when I was like 12 or 13. By the time I was 16, I was playing bass in a band with three other people who were like two or three times my age, and they would book the gigs, and we'd play pretty much two, three weekends a month. I was making money, so I was in high school playing gigs on the weekends, you know, basically a working musician, not making enough money for it to be a full-time job, but having fun. So underneath that was always this idea, well, if I can make enough money where I don't have to have a job when I get out of school, if I can make enough money playing music, man, that's being independent, right? Yeah. All right, so eventually I ended moving up here in the early 90s, and I was playing gigs around. I was playing Fells Point some. I was playing wherever we could get gigs. Me and one other guy, we were doing an acoustic duo because I was sort of moving away from doing rock and roll or pop music stuff, sort of towards country, bluegrass a little bit. So somebody raised the idea, and I can't remember who it was. He said, you know, if you want to play full-time and make money, you can go to Ocean City. Move to Ocean City during the summer, at least, you know, probably May to October, you can make enough money where you don't have to have a day job. So at the time, I was working at Appalachian Bluegrass in Catonsville. I guess at this point, I was writing originals. I'd made cassette, remember cassettes, in two different duos. And this duo that I was in at the time, we had a cassette of original material. So we had like an hour and a half's worth of stuff probably. So me and my partner, Brian, and his fiance, Chris, we moved to the beach. We all lived in the same condo. She worked for Miller Brewing, very conveniently. She used to drive the Miller girls around, take them to the bar. That's a whole nother story. Anyway, so right off the bat, we were able to book. We were playing 5 to 7 or 8 gigs a week, because on the weekends you could do Saturday afternoon, Saturday night, Sunday afternoon, Sunday night. So you get 4 in a weekend. You'd have like 1 or 2 days off a week, and you're making $100 a gig. So you're getting $500 to $800 a week, 800 on a busy week, or maybe more, and maybe 1 or 2 days off a week, all cash. I was able to have the condo that I was sharing down there, and I was still paying for my apartment in Fells Point. So I could play at the beach, take a day off. If I had a day off, I could drive up here, hang out in Fells Point. I mean, for a musician, right, 25, 26 years old, that's a pretty good thing. So I did that for 2 years, and I never wanted to do it ever again. And it got me off the idea that being an independent musician means only making your money doing it that way. And I'm going to condense down the myriad reasons why, apart from singing 6, 7, 8 gigs a week, 3 hours each gig. And when you don't have the greatest vocal technique, which I did not when I was 25 or 26, if I'd done that for 5 or 6 years, I probably wouldn't even be able to talk anymore. The fact that, as Natasha was pointing out, when you play that many nights and that many gigs a week, who do you hang out with other than like other musicians and the guy you play with? Nobody wants to hang out with you. You got to force yourself up to get up at 10 in the morning at the earliest, because you've been up till 3 o'clock. Even if you weren't hanging out, that's just when you get home. So, but there's special things that happen when you play at the beach. Let's let that run through your mind for a second. You're not playing for tourists. You know, in Fells Point, you play for a certain number of tourists. You're playing for people on vacation. That's a totally different thing. I'd never really experienced that. People on vacation think that you, the musician, came with their room. You're like the blueberry yogurt in the free breakfast bar in the morning. So they walk into the place where you're playing, and they're not there to hear you. The locals would come to hear us, and they would know some of our originals that we played, and we were playing our originals and trying to pick covers that like weren't too overdone, trying to be, musicians and put on a good show. The vacationers are not interested in that, right? They're there to have fun, and you're there to entertain them, and they want to hear what they want to hear. And for those musicians here who have done gigs, we all do gigs where people request stuff and get on our nerves and whatever. No, this is a whole other thing. You're there to serve them, and it immediately creates this conflict when they figure out that you're one of the only bands in town that is not playing Brown Eyed Girl, Margaritaville, American Pie, Angel from Montgomery, Me and Julio Down by the Schoolyard, over and over and over again. It's like, and for the non-musicians in the crowd, here's the best way I can explain it. Because some people would say, look, man, you could be digging a ditch. You get to play music. What does it matter what song you play? I mean, you're getting paid good money to play music. It's like living in a Playboy mansion. What are you talking about? Here's what it's like. It's like if you have a customer service job and part of your job is to answer the same question every day 4 or 5 times. And by the time that 50th person, that 100th person, that 200th person asks you that question, you're blaming them for the other 199 people. You're like, didn't this sucker hear the first 199 times that I played this song? And, of course, it's not their fault. They haven't. And then what you do is if for whatever reason you decide to play that, Margaritaville, because they put a tip in the thing, you just detach. Your brain just goes to a different place. You don't even remember playing it when you're done. You're not interested. And then at the end, everybody claps. And you're like, what the hell is wrong with people? This doesn't make any sense. Why am I here? So it creates this conflict of like, every gig, man, you end up getting in a, trying not to argue with people or getting a fight with them. And then the last thing about dealing with the vacation crowd is the pleading in their eyes when they make a request, which is just completely different because this is their vacation, man, and you are here. And it's here's the kind of fourth pina colada. Oh, my God, you guys are so fantastic. You're so great. My name's Lacey, by the way. And you guys, my friend Ashley's here. We're on vacation this week. And that song you played a few minutes ago, I don't remember, something about a girl in a car. It was just so good. I don't know. I don't remember it, but it was really good. But here's the thing. Our favorite song. Hi, Ashley. Our favorite song, it's that Indigo Girls song. I know you know the one I mean. It's about being okay with yourself the way you are. And I can't remember, but it's our special song. And could you do that for us? You'll do that for us, right? I know you know it. You know it. You know that song. Everybody knows that song. You can do it. You're gonna do it. It's fine. Oh, and The Greatest Love of All, Whitney Houston. You can do that too, right? Yes, you'll do it. It's going to be fine. It doesn't matter if you don't know the words. It's fine. So I'm just going to stand over here by your speaker thingy, and then so I can watch you to see you do it because I don't want to leave. So I'm just going to stand here. And they stand and they stare at you. What do I? Do I look like Whitney Houston? I don't. This was every day. Every day. So after 2 years of this, my idea of what being an independent musician was changed pretty radically. Spent the next few years, playing here, playing around. And then, as I said, around 98, 97, I decided, I want to do country music, the music that I really like. And nobody may show up. But by that time, my idea of being an independent musician was nobody gets to tell me what I'm going to do. If they want to offer an opinion, I may consider it. I'll take it under advisement. But if I want to completely ignore it and do something else, then that's what I'm going to do. And the cool thing for me is that I've gotten to do it and one of the last places where people would suspect that anybody would even show up to see what I do. And people do show up, and I really do enjoy it. Because really, when you think about it, this is one of the places in the world where a lot of rules get suspended all the time. Especially artistic rules. And if you have an idea, something that you want to do in Baltimore, you just go do it because there's somebody equally as crazy and ridiculous as you are that's probably going to show up. So that's all I got.
Yes, so fans of Artie Hill's music can Google him and find him online. He's got a couple albums. He's playing. He's won songwriter awards.
Yeah.
He's legit. He is a legit
honky-tonk
songwriter. All right, before we peace out today, we want to thank Baltimore Center Stage, who is a new sponsor of the Stoop podcast. They have a play running that right now that is equal parts hilarious and heartbreaking, Richard and Jane and Dick and Sally. It only runs till March 1st, so if you're interested, get there, and tickets are at centerstage.com. We also want to thank The Wine Source, located at 3601 Elm Avenue in Hamden. They are awesome,
mm-hmm.
and we love them.
We want to thank Maureen Harvey, who is our wonderfully patient and caring producer.
If you are in town and you want to check out our next Stoop live show, you can find us on March 31st at Goucher College Crash Hour Auditorium. We're doing a free show that's called Of Substance, Real Personal Stories About Our Complicated and Contradictory Relationships with Drugs and Alcohol. So you can find out more at stoopstorytelling.com. Please leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts, content, and such. And we will be back here next week.
See ya. When the radical preach come to get me released, we is all on the current news week. And I'm on my way. I don't know where I'm going.